Gregory's a tough act to follow. We do have a few announcements. And then I do have some questions here. I think about a dozen cards or so were turned in, but we'll also, I hope, have some time to entertain any other questions that these announcements and the questions and answers may engender. So let's plow ahead. First, the announcements. As you heard here Friday morning from Gary Shapiro, and then just a moment ago from Gregory, you heard the good news about XDS. We're really pleased about this. We've been working on this for some time, frankly, trying to keep it sort of quiet so that we didn't have unrealizable expectations, but we're really pleased with the outcome. The 8084 is a terrific unit, and what Everts has told us so far is that they think they're working on about a three-month time frame. So if all goes well here and the details are worked out properly and the order is actually placed with Everts, we're hoping to see perhaps a late summer implementation here, which I think everybody's going to be real happy about. Another announcement, Oregon Public Broadcasting, leader in digital television, is now making available two videos. You probably noticed them out in the lobby, to help consumers figure out the digital television antenna selection and installation. The videos are actually designed for antenna installers and service technicians to help them help their customers, which of course are our viewers. Charlie Rhodes, some of you know, I'm sure, former chief scientist of the Advanced Television Technology Center, and certainly one of the foremost authorities on reception issues and receiver issues, is on the video, and he takes the viewer right through the antenna selection process and everything. So please take a look at that out in the reception area, and there are also order forms out there for you to fill out in case you want to purchase these. Another issue is that PBS is once again taking a look at the tape format issue as far as program submissions into PBS. Specifically, we are considering and very close to deciding, I think, unless there's a huge uproar, to eliminate the 1-inch type C, which is still there, but we're thinking about taking that out. We're looking at a couple of others as well. As you remember, we added digital Betacam as a submission format, which was no cost, in addition to the D3 and D5 that is currently there. We said at the time that announcement was made that over a period of time we would think about phasing out the D3 and D5. We're not quite there yet, but I would certainly welcome any information or suggestions you have about that. The issue here really is a matter of infrastructure cost. The more formats that we support, and the more formats that we support without cost, the higher the cost is to PBS. And we all have an interest in trying to keep those costs down. So there is an interest here in attempting to limit the number of total formats that we accept. So I'd appreciate any comments or suggestions you have about that. You remember back last year in March, we introduced the March 2000 TOS, the technical operating specifications. Been in use for over a year now with wide acceptance and very, very few comments about them. The one comment that I've had has to do with digital video and the level of color bars. The specifications indicate 100% bars. And several post houses have called to say, do you really mean that? Because as you know, if you do put 100% bars in and it gets then translated to NTSC, you actually end up with above level bars. And our answer has been, yes, we really did mean that, because we think in the long run, that's where it ought to be. We recognize, though, that there are some perhaps interim issues that will arise, but as far as submissions to PBS, we do stick with what we have in the TOS. We're going to update the TOS in the next few months because there are a few things, including the tape format change that I talked about just now. And so if you have any suggestions or comments about the TOS, we'd certainly appreciate that just as soon as you can, as we're going through the process right now of rewriting certain portions of the TOS. No big changes. Let's see. We have a few additions to the PBS, ePBS website. EPBS website is a special purchasing site for the member stations and provides special pricing and product information, as you know, from various industry vendors. The list of vendors includes JVC, Sencor, and Sony. We are adding AgileVision, BitCentral, SeaChange, and Tomcast. We have a couple people in Jerry Butler's DSSG group working on this, and we're always looking for increasing the size of this. But we're also looking for real deals. That is, we're not in the business of just simply putting up company names to advertise them. We're looking for deals that really provide real service to the member stations. You'll also, by the way, find out in the document piles outside on the tables some information about EPBS, these two, that you may want to pick up just for your own information. DTV1 and DTV2, the two DTV feeds, we did a survey, and based on the responses to the survey about DTV1 and DTV2, we're going to undergo some changes, and the changes will take place in July of this year. Beginning in July, DTV1 will provide standard definition multicast services only. That's DTV1. Now, standard definition, though, includes the widescreen standard definition, and that will be 24/7, as it is now. DTV2 will then become an HD service only, and it will include any HD premieres. It'll include repeats of those HD programs. It'll also include the loop, which, as you know, based on the amount of HD material we have, is probably what will be there most of the time. And then, of course, special feeds. If there are special station events, we will also feed those on DTV2. As I said, this will become effective July 1. The program information from traffic and operations on DTV1 is available now and has been for some time. Beginning July 1, that same information for DTV2 will be available through the traffic information systems. So that at that point, from a station perspective, I think you can say that both DTV1 and DTV2 have grown up and have become real feeds with real data information for you to make use of. Again, that's effective July 1. A really nice announcement to make is that this past Tuesday, the NOVA program that PBS distributed, and I suspect most of you aired at the same time, it was a bit of a first, because that program, not only was it in high definition, it was also the first time that we'd done 5.1 audio. First time, actually second time, I spoke to Jerry Field a few minutes ago, he says actually the second time we did DVS on an HD program, but it was the first time that we did closed captioning on an HD program. And this was no small feat. We had a lot of help to do this, it was a pseudo 708 encoding, and very successful. So we're very proud of it. Another first for PBS and the member stations in terms of HD, an important step forward. And by the way, NCAM has posted the presentations from the most recent DTV Caption Summit on its website. That website is www.dtvaccess.org. I should have had this up on there, but I don't have it. Again, it's dtvaccess, A-C-C-E-S-S, one word, .org. And that includes technical information on encoding, distribution, and emission of both the 608 and the 708 standard. So it's a good website. Take a look at it, dtvaccess.org. Following an interconnection committee last December, Jim Fellows from Chicago asked for a meeting with Ed Kolecka and me to discuss the matter of training, professional development for the engineering professionals inside public television. And PBS, of course, has had a nice long history of technical training. You think back to the PBS Harris DTV Express as a good example. But even since the Express went away, the seminars have not. In fact, seminars are going on right now during the conference here in Las Vegas. And we're doing at least two of those every quarter. Anyway, we know that even beyond that, more needs to be done. So we had several meetings with Jim Fellows and Jake Klanderman. Jake Klanderman is the director of the Benton Academy in Chicago. Some of you know about the Benton Academy. And it's now resulted in PBS becoming a part of the Broadcast Technology Advisory Committee for the Academy. The Advisory Committee also includes the Society for Broadcast Engineering and engineering directors from five public television stations. The Advisory Committee has developed a framework for several professional development programs, and we're now in need of advice from the potential users of this professional training. Benton Academy has prepared a questionnaire. Some of you may have seen it. It's out on the document table, out in the reception area, in the registration area. And if you would be good enough to complete it and return it while you are here or after you return home, it would really help us a lot figure out what the application of this training might be. Again, the survey forms are available out in the registration area. Take a copy as time permits, and we certainly thank you very much for helping out with this. A couple of last items. Speaking of surveys, PBS Technology and Operations will be distributing a customer service survey this summer to measure how well we're doing. I'm just giving you an early warning, and the survey is going to cover technical delivery from the TLC, the SOC, technical services for producers and stations, distribution services, traffic data, engineering service, and other related services from PBS. So thank you in advance for watching out for this survey and for getting it back to us. As I say, it'll happen sometime this summer. We'll report back to you the results in the fall. One last item. As you know, in past conferences, Andy Butler has been kind enough to give us a NAB HITS presentation. We decided this year to change the format a little bit. Instead, what Andy has prepared for you is a document. It's a single piece of paper, but it is two-sided. And again, we have copies of this out on the document table in the registration area. What this lists is meetings that PBS has arranged with various vendors all 4 days of NAB. And if you're interested, it's a pretty good cross-section of the things that we think are the most important ones, at least from a PBS perspective, and we believe from a member station perspective as well, for you to perhaps come along. You're certainly invited to. You're very welcome to come along. These are meetings that have already been set up, so it's kind of convenient when you're on the floor to make use of this. Again, this document, then, is a two-sided document, but it's available out in the registration area on the document table. Those are the announcements, and now we do have some time for questions. Good thing. We have, maybe a dozen and a half or so cards that were turned in, but we'll also entertain questions from the floor. The first one. Is this really true? Why isn't Gregory Forbes promoted and given a raise? He's knowledgeable, efficient, hardworking, and an all-around great guy. Oh, I see. This is submitted by Greg's mother. Thanks, Greg. Yeah. All right. Onward. When is the current antiquated XDS time module going to go away and be replaced with a device that will accept SMPTE time code? I think we've answered that question a couple times. Again, it looks like perhaps on a three-month, certainly by the end of summer, we hope, time frame for that. When will the HD multicast streams be treated as operational channels instead of test beds? I think we answered that. Effective July 1, they will be fully functional streams, and also program information that will be posted along with the other traffic operations information. So July 1. As we purchase more and more DTV equipment, our operating budgets are getting hit hard by yearly software service contracts. Is PBS looking into any group discounts with the major players for these contracts? This is a good question, because I know we've tended to focus on the hardware aspects of this, but I know also from just the purchasing that we do at PBS that many times it's the software contract that is a much bigger issue than the hardware contract is. We will take advice from this question, and as a matter of fact, yes, we will look at those issues. We have looked at some. We did some work with Sony early on because they were one of our early partners in terms of group discounts, but we worked with them a little bit on some some software things, but we haven't emphasized this enough, and we need to. So I thank you for the question, and so we will be looking at that, the software parts of these contracts much more in the future. Using the PBS remote control software, we encounter the same error every morning at 2 a.m. when the janitor does its cleanup. What's the fix? All of the above, yes. Actually, yes, this is on our radar screen, and this is a little bit of a holdover from the old Y2K thing. And we have a project underway right now to replace that software, but it is somewhat dependent upon IRDs. And we are looking at also being able to supply IRDs for the DTV feeds. But we're not going to be ready with that project probably until the fall. So we're not quite sure how this is going to unfold here, but we're certainly aware of this issue. It would help us, though, if I could see a quick show of hands. Who uses the remote control systems for the IRDs? You see? Fair number. Okay, so we do have a pretty good. All right. It was one of the questions that came up back in the office a few weeks ago, and we thought, should we do a formal survey or should we just simply ask? And I think the ask is indicates that we certainly have a big enough group here that this really is an issue that needs to be addressed. And as I say, there's a project underway. We've got it funded. The issue is just how we implement it based on the fact that we don't yet know what all the IRDs are. So it's tough to go to a vendor and say, we need this if we don't know what it is that it's controlling. So a good question. And it looks like in terms of time frame, that certainly we'll have an answer for you in the fall, some kind of an answer, and we would hope to go forward and implement this. Is it possible PBS could do more satellite teleconferences so that all staff could become more informed about the many complex issues on all of our radar scopes? Yes, I recall going back, Ed, probably 2-3 years ago, we actually were probably more diligent about doing this, and we have done fewer of them recently. And I was talking to Ed about this a few minutes ago, and he has agreed that, yes, we will do some more. He also points out, though, that as a matter of fact, we also will be using some streaming techniques, as we probably have. If you've seen over the past month or two, there have been several events, I guess you could say, that have been streamed by use of the Internet. And our intention is to make use of that vehicle as well. So, but it's a good idea. You're absolutely right. It is better if more people at the stations can get this kind of information. So, yes, it is possible, and yes, we'll do it. When I have a question or a problem, I can never seem to find the right person to talk to at PBS. Is there an online directory or somewhere I can look that will help me get the answers that I need quickly? There is such a thing. It does exist at PBS. And yes, we will post it. Inside Technology and Operations, we have a very extensive list. And Ralph has put that together, I know, and I don't think it's posted, but it certainly will be. The other issue that may be of some interest to you is that we did go through a recent reorganization, and some of the job descriptions have changed. Some of the people have changed. We are now just putting the final stages on the org chart for that, and as soon as that's finished, we'll also get that out. We'll post that as well, so you'll be able to see who's doing what and how it all fits together inside Ed's organization, TNO at PBS. Has any testing been done to determine how successfully the low-band VHF channels can be used for DTV? Yes, specifically channel 3 or 4, which are plagued with impulse noise propagation problems and such. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Low channel Vs have been a concern of most engineers who have looked at the DTV implementation, and it is a problem. The most recent test that was done that was really comprehensive was the one done as part of the NAB MSTV testing. That testing was performed both in Washington-Baltimore area, but also up in Cleveland. And the Cleveland was done because that is a low V. And so there was a good deal of interest. And you'll hear later on today the results of that test when Lynn Claudy speaks. But just to give you a real quick answer to this particular question is, yeah, it didn't work very well up there. But we think it was primarily because of power levels. And I'm sure Lynn will bring it out this afternoon. But it was only a 5-kilowatt signal up in Cleveland, but that was also what the FCC's, you know, table indicates ought to work. So one of the conclusions of the NAB-MSTV testing was that, as a matter of fact, we're probably going to have to use more power than we thought we did. And we certainly, I personally feel we certainly will in the low band Vs, just because of the impulse noise problem. If I were king of the spectrum, I would not have had low band Vs, I think, in the DTV spectrum, even though I know it's nice because you can use lower powers. But I think the noise problems associated with that are significant and ones that would be nice to avoid. But what we have is what we have. So, but the answer to the question here, I think specifically, is testing has been done, and noise is a problem, power levels are a problem, and I think that's going to be addressed. Is there an effort underway at PBS to provide PSIP-ready files of program info that can be easily manipulated by stations to fit their broadcast schedules? If not, can this happen? There isn't any at the moment, but it's a terrific idea. I don't know what kind of resources it would take to do this, but I think it's an excellent idea. To some extent, it's a part of the overall thrust to attempt to be able to supply better program information to all of the stations on a timely basis, and certainly one way to do that would be this way, in addition to others. So I'm gonna take this one back and say, yeah, this is something we need to look at and we need to consider, because I think it's a good idea. I think it's something that should be done. Will there be a better way to deliver the PBS feed other than an ATS stream for stations which are not pass-through stations? The ATSC encoded feed causes numerous problems. Yeah, there probably are better ways. As I've said before, the reason we do it at 1939 is that there are stations that don't have encoders, and so the only way those stations would have a feed is for PBS to encode it and distribute it that way. There's another reason, and that is that it's efficient. We can put two of those on one transponder, as we do with DTV 1 and 2. At any other rate, we can't. We've looked at 45, and that takes a transponder. Unless you want to change the link budget issues as far as satellite distribution is concerned, and then of course we could do more, but we'd lose fade margin. If at a higher rate, you would either change modulation on satellite and therefore reduce the fade margin, or something else. So I don't quite know where this is going to go yet. It's still an open issue. I think it's an open issue as long as we have stations that don't have encoders. Certainly someday everyone's going to have an encoder, and we'd have to take another look at it. It's not quite clear to me, frankly, what the, other than channel 80, I'm very aware of that one, but I don't know of the other problems that this one presents to stations. I mean, you're going to have to decode this no matter what rate we send it at. And once you decode it and go to baseband, then of course it's digital video like anything else. So it may be in the further question period, we can get that one clarified, but I think I've articulated why we're doing what we're doing. We're certainly open to suggestions and changes here, but at the moment, I think for the whole system, what we're doing is the best thing, but I'm really open to hear other suggestions. What are the plans of PBS for distribution of HDTV program for Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands? What will be the interconnection to be used? We're going to be ready to broadcast HDTV signal by the end of the year. We identified this as a problem several years ago and still do not have an answer. We've looked at a couple alternatives. We know that, as you know, well, I'm sure most of you know, GE3, of course, only covers CONUS, and the way we now serve off CONUS is through GE1. GE1 is a single transponder, and we just don't have the transponder space then to do the DTV signals. But we have looked at some alternatives, and there are some other ways to actually do the encoding so that we could provide DTV service on GE1. It requires, though, a significant amount of hardware change, both at PBS and, of course, at the stations at Puerto Rico and Virgin Islands. So far, we've not identified where those funds would come from. But there is a technical solution out there. We've not implemented it yet. This issue was part of what's being plugged into the new interconnection plan. but realizing that that plan won't happen until 2006, that's not soon enough. So this is on our plate. We know we've got to do something about this, and we're still looking at the options. So I don't have a specific answer now, but you will hear from us on this one. Two of the trades have recently run stories that say the DOE has found a way to multiplex NTSC and digital in 1 6-megahertz channel. What have you heard about it? I think this is a reference to what most of you probably saw posted several weeks ago, 2, 3, 4 weeks ago maybe. We took a look at this, and we don't think this is a viable method. We're continuing down the ATSC track that we've been on. So I don't think this one's viable. If someone has more information about this, certainly, you know, be delighted to hear about it, but I don't think it's going anywhere. The last question I have here is a national agreement has been made with PBS and UniNet. I am unfortunately in a state in which UniNet does not come out of the ground. Will PBS work with other providers? This is really an IT question, but the answer is yes. We just as in the IT world, just as we have in the broadcast engineering world, we're looking for these kinds of partnerships, and we'll certainly expand this to the extent that it's reasonable and practical to do so. But yes, we would be looking for other providers as well. Michael Hunt could address this better than I, but we will be looking for other providers to help with this. We got a few more minutes, and we'd certainly entertain questions from the floor here.
Just a question or a statement, either one. Shortly, we're going to have the possibility of delivering to PBS a transport stream file. Would that be accepted as a contribution format? As if we give you a transport stream file, and if so, what would be, there would be a lot of parameters that you'd have to say this is the minimal acceptable, and this is the particular media that it would be on, like a zip drive, you know, et cetera. Is that worth considering?
Well, I think from a technology point of view, absolutely. I mean, most people that I talk to, and I agree with this, fully believe that at some point in the future, and not too distant future, we will be exchanging programs in file form. There are a whole host of questions I think you have to answer before you get there, though. Inside of PBS, we have looked at that, believe that that's coming. We have no means today to do that. So it certainly is not on the immediate horizon. But it is part of another project that we're looking at in terms of changing some of the infrastructure of the TOC, especially in the archiving area, and then that's one of the pieces that we would want to make sure that we plan for, contributions by files into PBS. I think you're right on in terms of technology, absolutely.
John, if PBS decides to no longer accept D3 and D5 as submission formats without a charge, does that leave us in a position where digital Betacam is the only format that accepted without a charge? And that's very interesting because that was a viable format when the original decision was made to accept only D3 and D5. It was a format that was available then. It was rejected. Now it could end up being the only acceptable format. And the second part of that question is, where does that leave us in the HD submission realm? Because digital Betacam doesn't work for HD.
Right. Let me take them one at a time. The only reason that we went to digital Betacam was the widespread use in the member station community of digital Betacam. I mean, it became a de facto format, in spite of PBS saying we want D3 and D5. And so I guess it was about a year and a half ago that we said, okay, we give up, we'll take digital Betacam, because that's what everybody had. And I realized there are several member stations that don't have that, in fact, have D3 and D5. And that's why we have been so slow in saying, no, we're not going to just simply send D3 and D5 off to the dustbin. Even if those two formats are not cost-free submissions, they would still remain as program submission formats, but there would be a dub charge that would be incurred if a program was submitted that way. The D3 issue is one of quality. Clearly the D5 is a superior quality D3. Also, the digital beta cam is a superior quality D3 simply because of the component composite issue. And once PBS modified its digital plant so that we are component, then it became clear that we should be looking at that image quality issue, and therefore that's when we decided also then to expand it to digital beta cam and then to begin considering the deletion, or at least, encourage people to not do D3 because of the image quality issue. But no decision has been made yet. We will stay in the status quo for a while. PBS has plenty of D3 machines and plenty of D5 machines, so at the moment it's not a financial burden in terms of the hardware. It is becoming more of a burden for us in terms of support for D3 and D5 machines. As fewer of them are out, we're finding support more costly for those machines. But at the moment, we'll stay with that. The HD question, we currently accept, as you know, D5 HD only. We are strongly considering and probably will accept HD cam as a second submission format. Both of those will be no-cost formats. We had an initial problem with HD cam that we believe Sony has rectified with a newer version of the machine. So now we're comfortable with HD cam. And I'm sure that sometime between now and next year, we will include HD cam in the list of not only acceptable formats, but also cost-free formats for HD. Okay?
On the same line of the tape questions, what are you considering? Are you considering any of the smaller formats, such as D9 or something like that, for future submissions?
We've considered that. I personally am a little concerned about the much higher compression ratios that we see in some of those formats and the impact that has. You got to remember that from a technology point of view, if you record even DV cam, let's say, that you record it and you look at it and it looks great. And so the question is, why would you not want to accept that? Our concern is that not only then is it submitted to PBS, it is then processed in some way at PBS and ultimately played out on a server, and then ultimately following the server, encoded then to DigiCypher 2. And as you go through these multiple encodes, decodes, things begin to happen that you didn't see in the original. And that's only to the station. It seems to me we also have to take into account what may happen at the station. Yesterday we had a show of hands about who all had servers, and you know, nearly everybody, you know, put up his hand. And that indicates that there is more signal processing, encoding and decoding going on than even that. And so we got to be real careful about this concatenation issue. So are we looking at them? Yes, we are looking at those formats. Is it imminent that we would accept those? No, but we'll certainly look at them.
Okay, then I'll just finish this up by saying the reason I'm asking this question is because when you eliminate 1-inch, we have exactly zero formats in common with PBS. We do not have DigiBeta, we do not have D3, we do not have D5, and so as a result, if we do want to submit something to PBS, we will have to be charged for whatever you want to charge us for doing that, because we don't have any of those high-end formats. Thank you.
Yeah, I know that's an issue. I mean, one of the exciting things about public television is the huge diversity that we've got. Clearly we have stations that have more equipment than PBS has, and then we have other stations that simply don't have the financial resources to have this other kind of equipment. And so we're sort of riding the fence on this. But I also think we have a real obligation to make sure that public television is always in the position of being able to provide, in terms of a quality level, some kind of a benchmark. and it's fairly high because public television has an excellent reputation and has had for all of its life in terms of technical quality. And we all want to maintain that, but knowing that that in some cases costs some money to do. And so, yeah, we are. We're trying to walk a very fine line there, and I'm aware of those issues. As I said, we will continue to take a look at those formats. I don't mean to dismiss them out of hand, but I am concerned about this quality issue in terms of concatenation.
John, PBS applied for PTFP funding for satellite receivers for the stations. Can you give us a little background on that? I've had different people ask me about it that maybe were questions about what spigots are going to be on the receivers. And
Jerry, can you help me out?
Yeah, we posted this and, of course, sent out the letter to all the chief engineers about it. We applied for a PTFP grant in the name of the stations, actually, to provide IRDs, DTV IRDs for all the stations. The request for a quotation will go out this month. It was held up primarily because of the timing issue, and that will go out this month to the vendors that replied to the RFI. Based on those responses, we'll make a decision. The biggest question we have to answer on this is whether or not we will go with a fully integrated IRD, or whether we'll go with a two-box solution where we actually purchase decoders and demodulators. There are only a couple of vendors making fully integrated solutions. There's actually one vendor that only makes an HD solution, not an SD solution. So, and that's driven by the fact that we're so early in the curve. But we recognize we need to get this done in order to stay ahead of the pace so we can provide those services you need. Did I answer all your points?
One of the most difficult problems in engineering and purchasing decisions in engineering, I think, is timing. You know, you can usually do the analysis and figure out what fits your requirements. That you can do, and engineers are pretty good at that one. The timing is another issue. It's bad to be too early, and it's very inefficient and bad to be too late. So trying to find that right time is a tough one. It's at noon, so we're going to have to wrap this up soon. Go ahead.
I had one additional question about the HD service changing in July. How will you package that? Will you have slates and test patterns, or will it be a pass-through like it is now?
It'll be continuous. It'll be what is normally called at PBS, at least a packaged feed, meaning that it will be continuous with interstitials. It'll be a feed that can be aired directly in a pass-through mode, or because you have the program schedule, you can also obviously delete and insert if you have the technical capability to do that. Okay. Anything else? There is one.
I'm wondering on the packaged feeds, are you going to include DTF structures similar to the kids channel, and the same question about PBSU?
I'm sorry, when to include?
The DTMF structure so that we have tones.
DTMF tones.
PBSU would be great and would dearly love it on the DTV channels.
I don't believe we have any intention to do the DTMF tones on the DTV feeds. Correct me if I'm wrong. No plans right now. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I had not thought of it, and that's a possibility. I'm more inclined to think actually there was, as we look forward into the future, there are probably other a little more elegant solutions that we might want to embrace. But
John?
Okay, anything else?
One quick one here.
We're it's afternoon. We're going to have to get moving. All right. We'll do one last. We've got to get out of here.
I guess maybe this is directed towards Ed, maybe a little more, but I heard some rumors that there's potential that PBSU may go away this summer.
It's not in the next fiscal year's budget. We're looking for some alternate funding for it, find some partners to do that, because we think it's extremely important to do, and we'd like to see it continue. If we're unsuccessful in finding the partners in order to help fund this thing, it's a possibility that we may go back to the stations and say, how badly do you want this, and are the stations willing to support it? I don't know the answer to those questions yet.
I think a lot of stations are planning on putting that in their multicast, you know, as more go on and on the air.
I would think so. I mean, I think it's a valuable service, and I personally am very supportive of it, would like to see it continue. Real budget issues going on here. I mean, a tremendous... pressures to control costs as much as we possibly can. And so we thought this was one particular cost that we could go and perhaps find alternate funding for, and then it would take it out of the budget. So at the moment, it's not in next year's fiscal budget, but I sure hope that it is maintained in some way. Okay, we need to go.
John, let me just add to it. The PBS board has recommended to management, the PBS management, that we creatively find ways to try to keep that spot for PBSU. As John said, the budget's not there. It costs about $850,000 a year to maintain. But that's not the true story. The true story is it's $850,000 to maintain a package service that is very different in its feel and texture than PBS Kids. So we really have to, we'd have to spend more money than $850,000. $850,000 would just kind of give you the status quo on a going forward basis. But I can tell you that the Finance Committee and the PBS Board is just as convinced as most of the stations are that PBSU is a good property. When I talk to cable MSOs, as an example, on some of the negotiations, they believe that PBSU and lifelong learning kinds of services are good properties, and they are interested in PBS Kids, and they're interested in what we do with lifelong learning channels. So stay tuned. I don't think this one's going to go away, personally. I think we will find some way of addressing it, but we just don't have the answer to that solution right now.
Thank you.